Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Detroit, PODcast, PrideOfDetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter. POD stands for Pride of Detroit, is the first three letters of podcast, hence we call it the PODcast. We're really calling it the Pride of Detroit, Pride of Detroit cast. But you know what? We have to explain it every time, and really just calling it PODcast on its own will make you think that either this is a podcast that's just really excited about capitalizing the first three letters, or it's about the 90s band from San Diego.
We're the ATM machine of podcasts.
ATM. We are the automatic teller machine. We are the Los Angeles Angels, the Angels. That other voice right there is Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader at Detroit Online. I am Chris Perfett, the adequate host at Chris Perfett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T. And third member of our crew back again after a brief hiatus from last week, along with the Toto Africa remix, Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock god. At Ryan underscore P-O-D. Ryan, buddy, good to have you back.
I love that I get my audio back. I don't get it on first bite. I only get it here. This is where I'm really given a chance to breathe.
Yeah. The music drop is for closers. And closers only happen on the P-O-D cast.
You know who's getting a
visit from Alec Baldwin tonight, folks. The Detroit Lions. San Francisco 30, Detroit 27, in a game with so many storylines. But I think the first most obvious point to start at is that, hey, the Lions didn't look like utter crap. At least not entirely. Okay, let's do the rundown real quick for the folks. We're giving our thoughts on the recap of the game here. There's headlines here, be it the call at the end of the game where Quandre Diggs looks like he's picking off someone and he gets called back.
Tracy Walker at the interception.
Listen, I've been drinking in a bar watching this game. I'm not here for this right now. I have notes. I'm not reading them while doing the rundown. We also have the storyline of LeGarrette Blount. Next segment as well, we're also going to be playing what we're calling tentatively Good Cop, Bad Cop, where we give you the good news and the bad news after this Detroit Lions loss. And then the return of some famous segments here. Wally's World is back. Rage Corner is back. It's PODcast. We're in mid-season form already, and it's week two. Ryan, you want to jump in here?
Where to begin? I mean, the Lions didn't look great, but then again, admittedly, a very low bar that they had to jump over, and they didn't really jump over it. They more like tripped, stumbled, and managed to get above the bar.
They kind of jumped over it, kind of like you jump over a jump rope. Not very high.
Yeah, and they kind of, you know, when they jumped over it, they gave it a good old Midwestern,
looked a little winded when they came down.
It was kind of like, you know, when you watch someone hurdling and they hit every hurdle, but they still finish the race. That was the Lions today. They crossed the bar technically, but there's still a lot of problems. And
hey, I'm glad they didn't trip and break their arm.
Sure.
Well, we're not entirely sure because Graham Glasgow had his arm wrapped up in ice. So
true.
Yep, maybe Ezekiel Ansah. I mean, Ezekiel Ansah was out of this game as well. Like this team could be coming apart at the seams when it comes down to it. But for a road game, this was at least, I mean, I hate to be the optimism guy here, but I mean, the Lions got it close late in the game. Granted, again, as we are going to continue to ask ourselves, why can't they do that for the entire game? But that's just my opinion on the matter. Any opening thoughts before we dive into the big headliners from this game?
I guess I'll jump in here. this team looks a lot like it did at the end of last year. And it honestly looks a lot like the team did last week, except minus the 5 turnovers and mostly minus the special teams blunders, although we did get one of those just for fun, too. I think this is exactly how the game would have looked had Stafford thrown 2 fewer turnovers last week. The Lions kept it close in the third quarter, then everything blew apart. In this case, the Lions also kind of got outscored in the third quarter again, but not so much where they were completely out of the game. So Stafford was in there in the fourth quarter, did his fourth quarter magic as he typically does, and the Lions came up short because when you live on the razor's edge of fourth quarter comebacks, you're not going to get them all. And so this team is very flawed on defense. This team is – I can't understand why they're so flawed on offense, but they are. And this is what every game is going to look like this season. It's going to be frustrating. The Lions are going to probably pull a couple of these out in late in games, but they're not going to control games from start to finish. That's just not who the 2018 Lions are.
Ryan, do you see this as being sustainable, as Jeremy says, for each game, or do you think this is just a matter of they were matched up an opponent like the San Francisco 49ers that they could exploit with this kind of, you know, usual script?
I think Jeremy's assessment is pretty on point when he says, you know, that this team kind of looks like the same team that the Lions were towards the end of the season last year, where it was survive and advance for the most part. It also kind of reminds me like how great the 2016 season was, because it was this, but it was all like sunny side up. It was always like Matthew Stafford and the Lions offense coming through in the clutch. And it just goes to show like what an anomaly that season was, like, statistically. But I am like a little bit more optimistic about the team than I was after last week's disaster. And I know that's not saying a whole lot, because that was honestly one of the worst performances that you'll ever see out of this Lions team in mass. But like, Stafford didn't look that much better. And for the fact that he only looked like marginally better towards the end of the game, the fact that the game was close, I think it's a testament to the defense, but the defense still didn't look good like as a whole, but there were parts of the defense that I like. So, I mean, I think my big takeaway from this game is that there were like parts that I was impressed with in bursts, but then like as a whole picture, like everything is still terrible bad.
two thoughts for me. One is that Stafford, I'm just shocked Stafford ended this game with no interceptions, because once again, he is kind of throwing like pre-2016 Stafford out there, where there's just some really haphazard throws he's making that I'm boggled he's still making. I thought we had guru whispered all of the bad juju out of him, but it's still happening. But hey, you know, 3 touchdowns, you know, passer rating of 101.7, QBR of 50. Cool. The other thought is that you mentioned the defense there, Ryan. I just think the 49ers offensive line is bad, probably worse than the Lions offensive line. And I think that's probably the defense looking good is probably an anomaly that does not carry over into the coming weeks.
They should by that, you know, by that pretense, then they also should have been much better against the Jets.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, the Jets, of course, getting smashed down in Miami. I mean, at home against the Miami Dolphins, maybe bringing Fireman Ed back down to earth a little bit there.
It's also worth noting that the Vikings only had 3 sacks on Jimmy Garoppolo in week 1. And the Lions had double that. They had 6.
You took my stat before I could use it later in the show, you jerkbag.
Yeah, I mean,
I refuse to believe that. I was watching that offensive line, and again, I'm an idiot. I know nothing about offensive line play, but...
No, yeah. You do have a point. I don't think the 49ers offensive line is very good. Of course.
Lakin Tomlinson plays for the 49ers. Of course it's not great.
Ooh.
Lakin Tomlinson, very nice guy. Not a good football player, though.
Former Lion. All right, now we should get on to the 2 big narratives from this game and why I am sure we are going to disagree with probably about half of them. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start on Blunt or on the holding call?
Well, let's just jump into the holding call, because I feel like a lot of people probably have a lot of different takes on this. It was actually kind of interesting. We put up a couple posts on the article because on the play, because I think it's an important play regardless of you know, whether you think it was a good call or a bad call, or if you're the kind of person that blames the entire game on that or thinks it was just an important nugget. Lions down 3, just over 2 minutes left. Tracy Walker, of all people, rookie, cuts in front of a Jimmy Garoppolo pass, nearly pick six it, gets down inside the 49ers 10. It's called back on a hold by Quandre Diggs. Guys, was it a good call or a bad call?
See, I have no clue because I tried watching this on, again, let me set the scene for you. I was in an LA bar. Did I say this in the podcast or was I saying this pre-show? I can no longer remember. I've had a lot of drinks.
Pre-show.
Okay, cool. So I was in a bar and at the same time on was Raiders Broncos. So imagine which game had the volume up. Again, this is Los Angeles. Now, with that in mind, they were showing that play. I did see the holding call and I did see the replay video. But I mean, at the time, because I was getting really bad cell reception service in there, I was not tuned into Twitter, to Lions Twitter. So I was disconnected from the hive mind. I was thinking independently and I thought, oh, that's a really awful call to take in that spot. But I have no clue if it's actually a good call or a bad call to make.
It's
that's where I was.
Yeah. You know what? Before I get into whether or not I think it's a good call or a bad call, it was a game-changing call, that's for sure. And yeah. I think if you're going to throw a flag on that play, it needs to be something that is so apparent that there's no question of whether or not it was holding or not. You know, I like if you're those subjective calls, like, and I don't know, like it's something that just needs to be so apparent that like when you show it on replay, it's like, oh yeah, Quandre Diggs was holding there. And you know, I did see Chris Burke from The Athletic. He tweeted out Quandre Diggs' thoughts of it. And, you know, Diggs said that it was awful and that, you know, them calling holding, didn't know that you could hold somebody when you're jamming them at the line. And it didn't necessarily happen at the line of scrimmage, but I don't think it was the right call. But at the same time, like, there was enough contact that, like, the flag came from like the opposite sideline though too, right?
I'm not sure. It's possible.
I think I remember the replay seeing the flag coming from like the opposite sideline, and it's like the ref is just so far away from the play that if you see Kittle like stumble because there is contact between him and Diggs, like you're probably going to throw that flag. Is it a huge bummer? Absolutely. I don't know if it's necessarily a good call or a bad call.
Yeah, well, I have a couple takes on this real quick. One is that I think I'd say this every year at least once. Shame on Fox's broadcasting crew because we didn't get a good replay of this. We got one replay of a horrible angle that we could barely see. Yeah, exactly.
And I was going to say Mike Pereira was pretty – I was watching Mike Pereira got his nose in this game pretty well and then suddenly not around for the holding call too much.
Right.
So,
I can't definitively say either yes or no. Maybe the – All 22 has a different point of view that I can tell, but I'm with you. I can't really say for sure or not whether that was a holding, but it didn't look flagrant enough to where it was obvious. But my second point here is, does it have to be? And this is kind of like an overall officiating question. When the game is tight, when it's a big play like that, do you want it like in basketball where they kind of let stuff fly? They kind of officiate differently in critical points in the game. Do you want that?
Yes.
I'm honestly asking.
Yes.
Brian?
I don't know if it should be situational because like the rules are the rules.
Right. And you also have to come down. You have to realize this flag was thrown before the pick happened. Like he threw this while he saw it happening. He's not paying attention to what happened on that side of the field. He's looking at a very specific point of the field that he's directed to look at. So it's not like, you know, the whole conspiracy thing, which maybe that's what I'm going to talk about in Rage Quarter. I haven't decided yet, but
I man, I can't, but like, maybe I'm just so nulled to it at this point. Like every time people talk about the refs screwing the Lions, I hear white noise and I tune out, man. Like I'm looking at all the papers right now and like no one's blaming the refs on this, because you know why? Because I'm sure Jeremy is going to get it at some point, but if the Lions were actually good enough to win the game, they wouldn't have to have it come down to right. where the ticky-tack call breaks the game for them. So,
but here's the thing that's frustrating as a fan. Yeah. You see a play like that. This guy, Quandre Diggs, had nothing to do with this play. This happened way away from the play. If he wouldn't have held him, nothing would have changed on this play. Absolutely nothing. And that's what's frustrating to see, just as an overall officiating overlook in this whole thing, is that something that happened away from the play that wasn't going to have effect on the game completely changed the future of this game. And that's frustrating to see from a fan point of view, because it sucks. I mean, it's almost like the block in the back on Jamal Agnew's punt return touchdown. Absolutely the right call, but Agnew scores without that block in the back. And so in that case, it's still on the guy who blocked him in the back, because why did you do that? You didn't need to. But in this case, okay. It's just like Quandre Diggs. Maybe he held, maybe he didn't, but it had nothing to do with the play. And you can't know that as a ref. You can't know that the play's not going there and not calling it. But it's just frustrating as a fan.
I do want to give the last word to this, and we got to really move on to Blunt because we are running out of time for the first segment. From Quandre Diggs' own words, he is saying the, in parentheses, official, this is from the Detroit News, so probably another word there, the official who is supposed to make that call, he said he didn't make the call. I think that says enough. We're just going to leave that there for Quandre Diggs. I want to talk about LeGarrette Blunt in 2 minutes or less. LeGarrette Blunt jumped in as Stafford was getting chased down along the sidelines. From what I understood, it looked like he thought that Stafford was, you know, he had gone out of bounds early and that the 49ers kind of hit him late. I mean, that's only if you assume that he got his arm out of bounds or something, but whatever. Either way, LeGarrette Blunt off the sidelines comes up and like just right out there shoving 49ers immediately. And the takes are flying on this one. What did you feel about what he did?
I thought it was totally, I mean, it was justified. Somebody had to do it. That's the franchise's quarterback. Like, if Matthew Stafford goes down, the season ends. There is no Lions season to even gripe about. It's not even, there's no point in tuning in. If but Matt Castle's the
did
starting
he really,
quarterback.
Did he really get hit that hard that it looked like he was going to be, like his health was going to be threatened, though?
Doesn't matter. It's the principle of the thing. Like, if your quarterback is running out to the sideline, and it admittedly, like, he wasn't out of bounds yet, but he was making the move to go out of bounds, like, there was no chance that Stafford was going to, like, stop on a dime and go back inside and, like, cut past, like, Elijah Lee. And if the quarterback's making that move, I think it's kind of just understood that, like, nobody's going to, like, shove the quarterback. But then, you know, Lee making that play, Blunt, you know, jumping out there, like, Blunt is nobody who's, like, you know, averse to, like, doing things like this. Like, I mean, Blunt is somebody who is rather blunt, but like, I thought it was, like, totally justified. Like, somebody has to stick up for your quarterback. Otherwise, other teams see that happen and they're like, nobody's going to stick up for, you know, pretty boy back in the pocket. So, you know, get your licks in.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that whole narrative is a bit overblown. I don't think teams really look at tape and like, oh, they're going to let me get away with it. I'm going to get away with it. Like, I think.
But what about Matthew Stafford? What about Stafford's perspective?
Sure. And maybe that's true. And you know, to the 49er who made that hit, he probably knew that, you know, someone was at least going to get in his face. And there's a right way to do that, and there's a wrong way to do that. And I think LeGarrette Blunt took the wrong way. First of all, because he wasn't even in on the play. He came off the bench. And essentially shoved that guy down. And yeah, the 49ers guy did a good job drawing a penalty there. But I think you just kind of get in his face. Like, you don't shove him. You just literally go face mask to face mask and tell him, hey, you fucking do that again, I'm putting you on the ground.
All right. Well, I have one more question about this game, but we really need to take a timeout. We're going to take a timeout. I'm going to come back with the one last posing question we have from this game, and then we are going to start playing, you know, we're going to take upsides and downsides on this game. We're going to talk about what's been improved in the Lions and maybe causes for more panic and concern, because, hey, guess what? As much as the Lions look improved, they are still 0-2. Stick around. We'll be right back on the Pride of Detroit PODcast.
Hey, sports fans, football season's here, and it's time to get in on the action with MyBookie. MyBookie is the industry-leading sports betting website that offers real Vegas odds on football, baseball, and all your favorite sporting events. You can take a side, the total, or even fantasy points props. MyBookie lets you bet online and win big. Did the game already kick off? Don't sweat it. MyBookie has in-game live betting on every major league and event. Even esports. There's no better time to join MyBookie than today. Go to MyBookie to open an account and start winning. Use promo code CHAMPION when you register for your account and get a 100% sign-up bonus up to $1,000 on your first deposit. Bet today. Visit MyBookie's website or call 844-866-2387. That's 844-866-2387. Check them out today and use promo code CHAMPION for a 100% bonus. Terms and conditions apply. For entertainment purposes only. Void where prohibited.
Pride of Detroit PODcast rolling right along. Footloose and fancy free. Question I want to ask is, because I mentioned Stafford, and we talked a lot about Stafford here, but I mentioned his play, and we talked about Blunt, you know, protecting, quote-unquote, the franchise. But there are a lot. I've got to say, man, we thought Stafford was secure for a while here, but the knives are out for Stafford among some fans right now. I don't agree with all of them, but I hate to box score read. Jeremy hates when I box score read, but so, I mean, looking at this, Stafford completed 64% of his passes, but like, I was just watching some of his deep balls in this game, and I don't know if you read the same thing I do, but I thought he overthrew a lot of his receivers deep. Definitely saw it just doesn't look like he can really hit granted, Jones and Tate were pretty well covered deep, but at some point you expect what?
You're absolutely right. I mean, yeah. I think the box score is absolute fool's gold in this game. You know, 347 yards, 101 passer rating. All that looks great. 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, but he also had a very critical fumble on a very poor decision from himself.
6.5 yards. That fumble. Yeah.
6.5 yards per 10. Per attempt is not very good. And like you said, he missed on some very key plays where he could have thrown for 500 yards today.
Two more touchdowns, including one in the end zone. Marvin Jones, if he had just thrown it, like he threw it over Jones's head. I thought Jones had it dead to rights too. And he just overthrew him. And like, yeah, in this league, in this NFL, it's not hard to make those short mid yard passes anymore. Like, and you know, the reason you're paying Stafford the money is you want him to also go deep as well. So like, I mean, I'm not ready to bury Stafford, but I think there are some criticism of him that are logical when you're paying him this much money. I don't know how you guys feel.
I don't like bringing the money thing into it because that's said and done. I mean, he's your franchise quarterback. This is the guy who you're riding, and I'm perfectly fine for it. I'm not going to let two subpar games from him change that. Like, you have to think about what's the alternative here. Do you want
I know there's no alternative, but at the same time, like, that doesn't mean that this guy, that he's blameless. Like, but I'm just saying, like, we're shifting away though, because like, I feel like over the past year or so that it has been more about, well, Stafford doesn't get help, the offensive line doesn't look good.
No,
and now it's absolutely, there's some criticism to make of Stafford.
Absolutely. And you know, he wasn't getting a lot of help. I mean, this game might have been a lot different had Theo Riddick made one of the final two catches of the game. But absolutely, Matthew Stafford deserves some criticism from this game because it has kind of been a pattern of his behavior that he's inaccurate early in games. And that's the one thing that was different from this game and last week's game. Last week's game was a lot of bad decisions. This game was just a lot of inaccurate throws. And to me, that's a little bit more consistent with the Matthew Stafford that we've seen. He's not always the most consistent thrower. His deep ball passes are kind of hit and miss very much. And today it was just a miss day. So it's a bad day for him, but it's not something that has me worried long-term.
Ryan, thoughts?
I think to describe it as a miss day is a little bit of an understatement for me, I mean, I truly think that what held the Lions back today on offense was Matthew Stafford, like point blank. And I think he's deserving of a ton of blame. I mean, there were of those deep balls that, you know, Brenneman kept on losing his mind over. I think legitimately there were two or three of them that Stafford probably wishes he had back. And had he gotten those passes back and connected with those guys, we're looking at a different scoreboard. Totally, completely. Like, I think that for sure. Like, it's really frustrating. And I think it goes back to the quote that Stafford had after the Jets game in week one. Like, you know what? Like, we have to be better. And that, like, starts and ends with me. Like, Stafford understands that on offense, this offense will only be as good as Matthew Stafford makes it. And we've seen that year after year after year. And we've given him, you know what? What if we add a running game? What if the Lions, you know, they get an offensive line? They get receiver. Everything is there. And the offensive line isn't playing as well as it could, as it's supposed to on paper. But I think it's giving him enough. I think Matthew Stafford's decision-making in this game was pretty poor. I think his, like, lack of pocket awareness was rather bad. Like, he was rushing decisions. He was checking the ball down a ton when he didn't need to.
I'm very eager to see the all 22 because I'm with you there. He did seem to be a little checked down happy today.
And he seemed a little skittish. And I understand that the pressure is there sometimes, but he was making, like, decent moves in the pocket. But then he would either step up in the pocket or move left or move right, get himself into a better position. And then it wasn't survey the field. He had a little bit of time, but, like, it was immediately check down to somebody.
It's almost like last week when he admittedly said himself, I tried to do too much. That he's like, okay, I'm going to go in the absolute opposite direction and try to do too little.
Yeah. Total opposite and, like, adjustment. And I think he deserves a lot of blame for this.
Yeah, as I said last week, kind of in the rant, like, if Matt Stafford wants to be considered a top 10 quarterback, he's got to start playing like it.
Agreed.
Anyway, now that we've gotten that out of the way, I'm glad we got that in depth, actually, because I think that was kind of that's an understated storyline from this game. I'll be curious to see how that evolves over the course of this season. Jeremy wanted to talk about the upsides to this game, and I am going to let him deliver to you optimism of why you should not completely count out the Lions, and then I'm going to come back and tell you why you should be scared shitless.
Yeah, well, okay. I wanted to do a whole segment on optimism just because I know the easy thing would be to shit on the team and talk about the draft and all that sort of stuff. Oh, it's absolutely easy because the Lions aren't a good team. I'm going to say that right up front. But I want to talk about some optimistic things we pulled from this game that might make this team at least entertaining to watch some weeks. And so let's start off. We mentioned it briefly in the first segment. Let's talk about the pass rush in this game, because granted, the 49ers offensive line, not that good, but we were talking about this pass rush like we weren't going to see any sacks from this team at all. And they had six sacks on Sunday.
Baby.
And Jimmy Garoppolo was running for a lot of this game, if we're being honest. And so you look at a guy like Devon Kennard, not a lot of people were excited about this pickup. Guy only had, what, 9 sacks in his career coming in. He has 3 already through 2 games. Hey, even Jared Davis picked up 2 sacks in this game. I'm not going to sit here and stand for
I was shocked when I saw Davis, like, was he on one of those sacks that nearly got him close to a safety too? Like one of those pressures?
Maybe. But like, yeah. We're talking about 6 sacks in this game, 8 QB hits total. That's something to be optimistic about. I didn't expect that out of this Lions team, especially because last week we saw what the pass rush was like with Ezekiel Ansah. Then once he was gone, there was nothing. No Ezekiel Ansah the entire game today, 6 sacks. That's something to be at least a little bit happy about.
What does Bill Simmons call this effect? The Patrick Ewing effect? Are we having a Patrick Ewing effect with Ezekiel Ansah?
No, we're not. But
he's not good enough to be the Patrick Ewing effect?
I didn't say that either. Do you have a bad cop take on that?
No, I have no bad take on this game. I think if you're looking for optimism from this game, this is a good place to start. More optimism. Kerryon Johnson absolutely looked a lot more comfortable today.
They finally gave him, I shouldn't say finally gave him a chance. It's only a second game, but yeah, I mean,
good targets too. 5 catches on 5 targets as well. Like, he's showing that he is as versatile as he should be.
Yeah, and stupid ass me tweeted out, the Lions are dangerously close to establishing the run early in the third quarter, and then the next two plays are holding plays on the Lions, and they back themselves up into it.
Can we talk once again? The Detroit Lions have finished a game with just slightly under 100 yards rushing. just by two. And I will say this, like, I was with a friend who was a 49ers fan, and he saw that Kenny Golladay touchdown, you know, the one where he's getting spun around, but he still has the wherewithal to drag his toe and get his arm past the pylon. And he said right there, SportsCenter top 10. And he was impressed by Golladay the entire day. He thought Golladay was very, very good.
Back-to-back good games for him. But just to go back on the running game a little bit, I think there's optimism there. And honestly, I think the pass protection is pretty good. And so we talked a little bit. Blunt did great before he started punching people again. He was great. Overall, Lions 98 yards. And the bigger number there is 5.4 yards per carry. Now, the Lions just need to stop falling behind by 17 fucking points. So they aren't running it only 18 times a game and actually can establish the running game. That being said, I just think, I don't know how the Lions offense gets in a rhythm with this running game, because it seems like when they were successful on the run, they would be unsuccessful in the pass game and stutter out. And like, they'd be the thing that was most frustrating about this game, especially early on, is that because the Lions running game was okay, they got themselves into a lot of third and shorts, third and threes, third and threes, third and fours, third and threes. They went 0-for-4 on their first four opportunities on third and three or third and four and less. And that's just unacceptable. I don't know if that's Matthew Stafford. I don't know if that's Jim Bob Cooter. I'm guessing it's definitely a combination of the two. But when you have a good, like, this is the whole thing that we were talking about. Once Matthew Stafford gets a running game, he'll be in better situations where he's not throwing on third and 17 and has to hit Kenny Golladay 40 yards down the field. Now he's getting those opportunities, and the Lions aren't converting on third and threes. And I don't know what's up, but it's frustrating. But again, this is supposed to be the optimistic segment, and I'm ruining it again.
I was about to say, you're starting to transition to where I want to go.
Right. But no, if the Lions can get it together early in the game, the fact that this running game had a pretty solid game against a very good Niners defensive front, that's positive. And so pass rush, running game, two positive things that I'm not sure we expected coming into this game.
All right, now it's my turn. Before I point to the schedule, I just want to quote something from Justin Rogers, who gave the secondary a D+ here, and I'm kind of with it right now. I don't think it's fair for him to put Quandre Diggs' kind of blown holding call part there, but I will say, like, he does mention Tease Tabor, first start of the season, blows a zone assignment on a first half touchdown. They give up 6 passes of 15 yards or more. Really struggled with penalties from a few of the guys. Like, if that's going to be the strength of the team, is suddenly kind of struggling with a team like 49ers, I'm kind of a little worried. I will say this. I'm not there with this front seven. I'm just not. They looked a lot better. They at least looked like they belonged on a football field. They did not look like they belonged, as I called them on the Niners Nation interview, the beak squad at Wayne State. But there's a lot of work to go, man. I don't think the 49ers are that good of a football team. And I am kind of worried playing kind of the what are they game, because the NFL is so weird and so wild. But at the same time, this feels like a fool's gold game for me looking at it. And once again, I'm sorry, I have to look the schedule ahead. And I'm already being beat out there by Carlos Monterez saying 0-5. And I have people asking me, how does it feel to go 0-5? Because we are going 0-5. I don't know if the Lions are going 0-5, but I'm just saying next week is Sunday Night Football, and the Jacksonville Jaguars just took it to the New England Patriots, made Tom Brady look like a fool. Vegas knows quite well how New England does in these bounce back games, and you damn well better be sure all that surveillance tape that Bill Belichick's been making on Matt Patricia every moment he was living in Massachusetts, he's digging it all up right now. Every moment where he went to shit, he's looking at it. He's looking for anything he can use. We'll say this on the positive note, Patricia did trim the beard. So good things. But like, again, I think this is going to look like a very rocky road to start. I don't see where the Lions get some good favorable matchups going forward. And I am worried because of what we, the two things we said are the strengths of this team before the season starts is Matthew Stafford and the defensive backfield. Both of them look like they're in trouble. And I don't know how consistent the other elements of this team are to say that will offset it.
Okay, I have a couple things. There's a lot to unpack there. With the Matthew Stafford thing, I think that's something that you can pretty much rely on getting better eventually. And I know you might fight me on that. Yeah, I think
will it? Okay.
We have 3 years under Jim Bob Cooter now to prove that he doesn't normally play like this. So I'm not worried about that. The defensive backfield, though, that to me is absolutely worrisome because it's looked really bad 2 weeks in a row.
Another scare on Darius Slay, too. I'm kind of worried about his health.
A much more significant scare in that he did suffer a concussion and did not come back in this game. And he's been kind of quiet anyways. Not saying he's been bad, but he's been quiet. The only guy that really looks good out there right now is Quandre Diggs. I almost said Glover Quinn, which is absolutely not the right answer. Quandre Diggs, only guy that really looks good out there. And I'm also not going to harp on his hold there because he had a couple of pass breakups in this game. But, you know, Tease Tabor first start of the year gets benched for Nevin Lawson. The only reason he probably comes back in this game is because Darius Slay is pulled. And Glover Quinn, again, looks slow, again, looks lost. Who else is out there? I mean, maybe the reason that we saw Tracy Walker out there picking off a pass that late in the game is because they don't have any other answers out there. And that's definitely a big problem. And when you have guys like Jimmy Garoppolo and Sam Darnold lighting this defense up, completing like 80% of their passes and throwing for 118 passer ratings, that's going to be real bad news when Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady are in town.
Yeah, baby. Ryan, any final thoughts on this?
It's going to get better. I truly think that. Like, I think that there isn't a ton of talent on the roster. Now we were pretty confident that the secondary was like, you know, going to be the best part of this defense. And so far, like the defense as a whole has just kind of been bad, but there've been flashes. Like, I mean, even today, like getting 6 sacks and getting like consistent pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo, regardless of whether or not their offensive line is any good. I mean, like go back to the preseason. Like, I mean, we were thinking that the sky was falling because the Lions could get zero pressure on anybody. Didn't matter if they were playing the Raiders, didn't matter if they were playing, you know, whoever it was. So I think truly, like, it's just going to take time. And I know that none of us really have the patience for this. And it's, you know, they're not dress rehearsals anymore. Like, these are the real things. The Lions are 0-2. Like the chances of a team making the playoffs after starting 0-2 are basically slim to none.
Yeah, go on.
I'm just thinking that there's room for progression, and I think that you're going to start to see some things start to coalesce and gel a little bit better.
I hope so, because I'm just saying I'm watching Sunday Night Football right now, and the Dallas Cowboys offensive line is like parting the Red Seas for Ezekiel Elliott. And I can't imagine what that's going to look like in.
Yeah, we didn't even talk much about the Lions' run defense, but. Ugh!
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's enough. Yeah, we're good.
No.
We're good. We're going to take the next segment to bring back some old favorite segments we've had here. We finally made Ryan get us a Wally's World. We're going to hear from Wally. If you don't know who Wally is, we will explain. It's been a minute. And Jeremy is helping to bring back Rage Corner. The music is in pre-production stage, so he's not going to have an intro, but he just wants to rage. We'll be right back.
Hit it. Where's Wally? Where's Wally? Did you see him? Where's Wally?
Wally time here on the Pride of Detroit PODcast. Yes, I am opening with the music. It's been too long since this. We do this out of love. I just want to preface that because I feel like I think Ryan was worried a little bit that maybe we're harping too much on Wally, and it's not. It's just that I love the fact that we found someone like this out in the wild, and that we can. It's someone who we cherish.
Yeah, you think it's the wild, but they literally like are right in my backyard. So
the call is coming from inside the house, and the call is the call is telling you why Patricia should be fired.
Sir, this is a Wendy's.
All right, background on Wally. Wally is, well, I'll let Ryan explain.
I like it better when you explain who Wally is.
Well, Wally is Ryan's father. And again, yes. Like Wally's not his actual, like it's his nickname. It's his nickname. It's not his actual name. It's something deriving to Wally. We'll just say that. I've met Wally before. He is a kind, gentle man. He is very lovable. He's very sweet. He is true blue in everything about Detroit. He works in one of the auto factories for his general security. We will not say which one, but let's just say he works in the auto industry. And what he's on, what shift? Like he's on a late shift. He's on a late shift. And so he has plenty of time to fill his head in everything else with sports talk radio and sports talk television. So everything you can imagine, everything bad about 97.1 The Ticket and First Take and Undisputed and all those other shows, I don't know if I want to say bad, because like that's how the sausage is made. That's what we're going to do. We're going to yell about sports things. It's just a matter of how much we're yelling about them and what criteria we use to yell about them and how much we disagree and whether the disagreement is opinion or not. Either way, Wally swims in the primordial soup of the hot take.
Yes.
And so
yes.
When he comes back to Ryan, it is distilled. He has taken everything from that primordial stoop, and he is ready to speak like an oracle, the one sentence of everything distilled to the opinion of the true blue auto worker sports fan.
Yes, precisely. I think you just described who Wally is better than I could even describe who my own father is. So
I try to be a poet.
Yeah. Yeah. So essentially what we do here, I bring a story from yesterday's or whenever from Wally to you, the listener. And because I wasn't able to get on the show last week,
Before we begin, I just want to say too, we are totally ripping off what Dan Le Batard does with his father too.
Totally. I mean, inspired. I don't want to say rip off, but inspired.
Lovingly inspired.
Wally is a spiritual successor to Poppy. So
I hope so.
Yes, I could only hope that Walt could strive for levels like that. But anyway, so last week, didn't have the chance to join the podcast due to circumstances. And Wally and I are watching the first game. We're watching Monday Night Football together. It's before halftime, so, you know, we haven't, you know, hit DEFCON 1 yet, but things aren't looking good. And camera cuts to Patricia on the sideline. Wally shoots me Patricia looks like he's been putting on weight ever since he took the job. He didn't look that big when he was in New England. So just like jokingly, just because I know that like this is something that probably somebody has talked about. And I say, you know, yeah, it's probably from stress eating. And my father looks at me square in the eyes and goes, "Ryan, you might not be wrong." he doesn't say you might be right. He hits me with the double negative of "you might not be wrong." And I kind of just looked back at him, and he didn't have anything to say. He just like got his tablet back out and started looking at fantasy sports, because like that's how he like views football now. Like it's definitely like a commodity that he can like, you know, trade and consume. So sports and football just in general have like taken on like a different turn for Wally. But like now when he has observations to make, it's about like the size of the head coach not about like things that are going on in the game.
He's reading, he's moved on to the dreaded body language phase.
Yes, he has. And I, you know what? I can tell you one other quick little Wally's World story. So last Sunday, Wally and I played each other in the first week of fantasy football. And it was just a no good day for my fantasy team because I benched Patrick Mahomes and I benched Tyreek Hill against my better judgment. I'm an awful person. Getting that out of the way. But I go out and I want to hang out with some people and watch the games. I come back and Wally's wearing these bifocals, scrolling through his tablet, looking at his fantasy app, and he looks at me and he goes, left some points on your bench, huh?
It's the first thing, not how was your night? Not, you know, did you have fun? It's like, God, you suck at fantasy football.
Oh no, yeah, we're past the courtesies. We're past all that stuff. It's just immediately, hey, I dumped your ass in fantasy football this year. Just remember you wouldn't be here without me.
I cannot wait because we're getting deeper into the college season 2. And I just remember that picture of Wally hiding behind the couch during the Michigan State game. And
I've showed all my friends the he didn't get it video. And now it's something that's like worked into like all of our lexicon. Like, it's just like we'll just like shout he didn't get it for whatever reason.
He didn't get it. Nuh-uh. We've never played that on the POD cast, and I'd have to go find it, but we'll play it at some point later when we're like running low on Wally's World stuff. But rest assured, it's good to have Wally back. Tell your father hi for me.
I will.
Awesome. All right. This is where I normally played the Rage Corner music, but I'm trying to clean it up, make it a little more presentable. So I don't have it for this week. Jeremy, it's time to shift in and let you be the angry hot taker.
Well, if you're trying to clean up the Rage Corner music to make it more family friendly, I'm afraid this is not going to be a family friendly segment
out,
anyways.
I'm just taking out all the phallic references from it. That's all.
Uh-oh.
How hard is it to do clock management in the NFL? Why does every NFL coach suck so bad at it that they can't understand general strategy? General fucking strategy. Because at the end of this end of the first half, the Lions were in a perfect situation defensively. On first down, with the 49ers had the ball about a minute 50 left. First down, incomplete pass. Awesome. Not only do they gain no yards, they stop the clock. So if you want the ball back, you got a real good shot at it now. Second down, even better. You get a sack by Christian Jones. 9 yards. So now they're back at their own 13-yard line. They're back at their own 4-yard line. So now you have them in a long third down. They're probably not going to go for it because they're deep in their zone. And any sort of dangerous play could result in disaster. So you know they're not going to really try and get a fourth or third 19 conversion. You know you're going to get good field position because they're at their own 4-yard line. The only thing you need to do is call a freaking timeout, because by the time this play ends, it's 1:42. You can get the ball back theoretically now with, I don't know, 1:30 at the most. Instead, Patricia lets all the time run out on the play clock. The next play takes part at 1:02, 40 seconds gone. After that, incomplete pass. So you don't have to use a timeout. Thank goodness, because you probably wouldn't have called it there, and then you would have only had 20 seconds left. Now, it'd be one thing if Matt Patricia was like, you know what? I wasn't thinking about it. This isn't usually my call. I'm a first-time head coach. It slipped my mind. Won't happen again. But nope. Matt Patricia, noted rocket scientist, pencil in his ear, doubles down in the press conference saying, nope. We wanted to keep them exactly where we needed them, which is exactly where we had them. He's talking about the timeouts. So it was great. We moved the ball downfield. We got into scoring range, which is exactly where we wanted to be. So it was actually perfect. Now, Matt Patricia, I know you're smarter than this. I know that you know just because the result turned out okay, that doesn't necessarily mean that the right decisions were made. That is utter. There's no defending what he did there. There's no defending let 40 seconds run off the clock. You are a better team. You are a team in a better position with those 40 seconds on the clock with one less timeout. The timeout does not matter. It it saves you 40%, 40 seconds on defense, only saves you about 15 on offense. So that's a 25-second difference. So if you're getting the ball back, you would rather have that 40 seconds than that 15 seconds you saved with a timeout on offense. Utter bullshit. Horseshit. On the easiest thing, I can sit here, and there's not a lot of things I can say I do better than an NFL coach. I can't say here I can call a better play than Jim Bob Cooter. I can't. I can complain about Jim Bob Cooter, Bob Cooter's play calling.
Jesus. Holy God. Okay, Shut it down.
You might want to bleep that part. But I'm saying, like, I can sit here and say I am a better clock manager than Matt Patricia if he thinks what he did was right. I can say that I'm a better clock manager than most NFL coaches because I don't understand how the easiest thing to see from home is so distant to these NFL coaches because there's no defending what he did. None. Nothing. No matter what he said, it was going to make me mad. But what he said, doubling down on his strategy, is inane to me. I don't understand it. I don't understand how some people can be so smart in some areas and so fucking idiotic in others because it's frustrating. It didn't necessarily cost the Lions on Sunday, but it will cost them again if they try that again.
You know what else you can do better than an NFL coach?
What's that?
Dress better than them.
That's not true. I am a horrible dresser.
I know you are, and yet I am saying you can dress better than them. By the way, first thing my 49ers friend told me when he looked at Patricia was I was the one who noticed they trimmed the beard. And he was like, oh, hey, Patricia's wearing his hat on straight now.
So. Interesting. Hmm. Also, was what you just said to Jeremy a compliment or not?
Backhanded, I think, is the right word. Yeah, the kids use.
The only kind of compliments you got in your arsenal.
I mean, I used a lot of them for Wally, so I didn't have many left.
Fresh out.
Yep, fresh out of compliments to give. I will compliment, however, the dress style of Ryan Fitzgerald, who Patrick. What?
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Did I do it? God damn it! I did it again. I've been doing that all day while I've been drinking. Ryan Fitzpatrick. Yes, thank you. Who? He bared some chest.
He looks like Conor McGregor light.
He looks, there's nothing light about his take on Conor McGregor.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's got weight on McGregor, I think. I don't know. But
him and a lineman did something like really weird pregame though. They like Fitzpatrick like lifted up his helmet and exposed his beard. And I don't know if it was a lineman or it was just another Bucks player. They like rubbed beards together.
Ooh, that's sensual.
It was a little bit.
That's some Avatar shit right there.
Ooh. Do you think Jameis Winston gets his job back with Fitzpatrick playing as well as
he
does?
I'm not having this conversation.
I think he does. It's just in the XFL.
And with that, we are on to the PODcast mailbag.
Hey, sports fans, football season's here, and it's time to get in on the action with MyBookie. MyBookie is the industry-leading sports betting website that offers real Vegas odds on football, baseball, and all your favorite sporting events. You can take a side, the total, or even fantasy points props. MyBookie lets you bet online and win big. Did the game already kick off? Don't sweat it. MyBookie has in-game live betting on every major league and event. Even esports. There's no better time to join MyBookie than today. Go to MyBookie to open an account and start winning. Use promo code CHAMPION when you register for your account and get a 100% sign-up bonus up to $1,000 on your first deposit. Bet today. Visit MyBookie's website or call 844-866-2387. That's 844-866-2387. Check them out today and use promo code CHAMPION for a 100% bonus. Terms and conditions apply for entertainment purposes only. Void where prohibited.
Mail time.
The mail's here.
Here's the mail, it never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
Mail time. Hashtag ask POD. As always, get your questions in. Bear in mind, we're trying to get these games, these things out on Sunday night, unless they're a primetime game. Next week, we will have a thread for Ask POD, but by and large during the season, because we kind of like fly this from the chin, it's going to be on your Twitter. Look for the calls for it. Hashtag ask POD. That's where we ask for the questions. I said we'd get to reviews. We were too mad to do reviews last week, Jeremy.
Okay, this week we have two reviews. One good, one bad. Just we have a bad good cop, bad cop thing going, I guess, this entire podcast.
Can we do the bad one first?
Sure.
I'd rather end on a high note, yeah.
Yeah. One star from Woody 0210, and I'm already skeptical based on the username. It says, yikes. Jeremy is great, but man, the other guys make it sound like it's a chore to do the podcast. Chris really ever knows what he's talking about. I mean, come on. All right, next one. Jacob.music88, 5-star, says impossible to underestimate. This podcast is like getting 80-20 hamburger meat. A lot of fat, but still gets the job done. They start each show off with lines material that fans can get behind, and it slowly dwindles into the unknown. Overall, it's a very entertaining podcast, and the guys do a great job bringing different fan perspectives. Listen to every show. Thanks, Jacob.
Thanks a lot. And yeah, I agree with that. This show is basically a descent into the madness of Lions fandom.
I mean, let's be honest. By November, you're going to be begging for us to talk about anything other than the Lions.
Which brings us to our first question we have here in the PODcast mailbag from Robert Palma. When can we expect a draft rooting guide?
Never. Never for me.
I lost my brain a little bit when the Lions had that disaster that occurred in week one, and I changed my Twitter name to Play Dead Fred. And I mean, I'm not there, but I could get there pretty soon.
Never, never, never will I root for draft position ever.
Hold on. Are you a bigger fan of Play Dead for Ed or Suck Bofa for Bosa?
Am I incriminating myself if I say it's the latter?
No.
Jesus Christ.
Jeremy could never root for an Ohio State player anyways, but...
I know that. He seems to just generally be a curmudgeon on these kind of things.
I'm a curmudgeon! What?
Okay, this question is from last week, but it's too good of a question to have been sitting here on our mailbag. It got in a little late. Troy Kilgore, what's the best thing that's happened in the POD Slack channel this week? I feel like this needs to be a reoccurring segment.
It probably should. That's a good idea, but that just means you have to come up with more theme music.
Damn it.
Yeah, you're creating more work for yourself. So
let's just say this. Adding new people to the Slack channel has been an excellent idea.
Yeah, kinda. I don't know. Not that big of a fan of the new people.
No,
they're okay. Like they're okay. Hamza's my favorite.
Names.
Hamza's my favorite. That's for sure.
You're only about that because he's younger than you.
It's the only thing that Hamza has now that he's been banned from Twitter for being a 13-year-old.
For being a 13-year-old at one point in his life, Jeremy. Can you elaborate on?
He's 13 years old.
Yeah, he's forever 13 in my mind now.
Chris, you wanted my honest opinions? Here we go. Yep. Hamza's okay. My favorite. Monster's the one who threatens me the most.
In more like than one way.
New hire superlatives right now?
From both a professional and an intelligence standpoint.
No, I mean, like, he probably literally threatens you, too. Like,
yeah,
he's going to get you.
Well, yeah, he does all the time, and it's about my age. Like, I don't understand it. But Levy is it Levi?
Levi.
Like the jeans? Okay. Sorry, Levi. But, I mean, I don't
we haven't had him on the podcast yet. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's kind of our quiet, like, enforcer of the comments.
Yeah, John Whitaker always a favorite, but I mean he's like behind Hamza at this point. And then
Kelly.
Eh.
What? No, she shares all the fun stuff with us. She shares all the things people try to say to her because she's a woman on Twitter. And yeah, that implies a level of just hell.
That's a total hellscape that I don't know how she has the mental fortitude to deal with that on a daily basis. So kudos to her on that.
I mean, that's why she needs to be on the POD cast to explain.
For sure. But at the same time, she has some pretty crappy takes.
Yeah, definitely like college football teams right up there.
Okay.
And now I find the next question. Even though I don't think we've ever answered Kilgore's question, we will try to have something for you next time. Derek Jelly asking us, are the defensive struggles more an indictment of Patricia or Quinn? Also, given that I try to eat keto and need a food question, what is a better steak cut, ribeye or New York strip?
I'll answer the first question. I don't eat a lot of red meat, but Wally does, and Wally always gets the ribeye.
Is that? I don't think that's more lean than the strip, though, is it?
I don't think. Also, not the first question.
Second question. It's whatever. It doesn't matter at this point. Well, why don't you answer the real first one then, Jeremy? You love these questions.
I mean, I don't like the black and white of the way that was posed. It's a little bit of both. I think maybe we can give Patricia a little credit for generating pass rush with how bad his personnel was today, but the defense was overall bad, and especially the run defense. And I think it's mostly personnel based. I think Jared Davis continues to really, really struggle out there. And the one thing that we thought maybe he could do well is run defense. He was overrunning plays. He was underrunning plays. He can't seem to get the timing down. He's either frozen solid or it's running it like a bat out of hell in the wrong direction. And so I think if you're looking for something specifically blame the Lions run defense on, I think it's the linebacking personnel, and that's a cooperative effort. I don't want to put that just on Quinn, because I think Matt Patricia certainly has a style of player that he's looking for, and we're not getting it, I guess.
Okay, next question from Mr. Owens to keep pissing Jeremy off. Now that Patricia has shown his D can get pressure on the quarterback without Ziggy, do you think he is definitely leaving after this year?
I thought this was Ansa's last year, regardless of how he performed.
Yep.
Okay, nice. Easy. Next question here. Excuse me as I get my throat cleared up. Yakutut asking us, what's up with Kerryon and his usage going forward? Talk about that goat, please.
Slightly better today. Maybe it was a little bit born out of the fact that, you know, Blunt couldn't play for essentially like an entire quarter. But I did like how involved he was in the passing game. To be honest, I think I would even like Kerryon to be out there more than Theo Riddick. I think that Kerryon Johnson should just be the guy who's probably getting the most amount of snaps from the running back position.
Do you want Johnson over Blunt for sure?
Yes. In terms of total snaps, I'll say yes.
It is getting kind of to a situation where it looked like Kerryon could be the new Theo Riddick, except with the ability to run between tackles. So I'm with you. Like, I kind of want a 1-2 punch that's Kerryon and Blunt. And it hurts me to say phasing out Theo Riddick, but, you know, it was a really rough day for him today.
Let's take a question of someone else who might have pinpointed another person who had a rough day from Josh Harrington. Why does Glover Quinn seem exceptionally slow all of a sudden?
Oh, man, we saw it again today.
It's sad. I don't have a good answer for that, but it's
getting
sad.
Old, man. That's what happens.
He's one of my favorite players on the team. He's one of the guys he literally spent all 45 minutes that the media was allowed in the locker room talking to the media. The entire time he was just talking to media. And one of the nicest guys, one of the smartest guys, and he's been one of the best Lions players. Obviously, he's, you know, still a captain of this team too. So he's a leader, he's a smart guy, but I mean, it's 32 years old.
Yeah.
The real sad part is I get the feeling this is going to be his last season too, because we saw the Lions didn't even use him as much as they did in previous years. And maybe they see the writing on the wall. Maybe they're looking for a different guy strategically, but Quinn has one more year on his deal and the Lions can save almost $7 million by cutting him. So
can I also say this too? Usually when they're spending that much time buttering up with the press, I'm not saying this is what he's doing, but just from my experience and hanging out on athletes now in the media, spend a lot of time talking to the media. You're trying to get ready for a career in media.
The other thing too, the Lions did draft Tracy Walker.
Mm-hmm. All right. Will McPhee asking us, choose one, Jeeves, Siri, or Alexa?
Ask Jeeves, hands down. Alexa, for real, the feds. And so is Siri. I don't think Jeeves was ever like, you know, shady like that.
Well, first off, Jeeves still doesn't have a voice though, does he? He's not the same thing here, right?
No.
That's what we're talking about though. He knows to keep his mouth shut.
Yep.
He ain't no snitch.
B, is this a kill Mary fuck?
None of them have the voice that the dear angel of our podcast recordings software has. If Siri had that voice, I would say Siri.
What's the Google voice? Are we just calling it Google? Like, she should have a voice.
Sup, Google?
Like, it's a terrible name for her.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, the answer is kill Siri, marry Alexa, fuck Jeeves.
All right. This is the part of the mailbag where we've jumped the shark.
Well, let's try to get back on it, because John Whitaker's dropped us a question. The commentators have sucked. Which commentators from other sports would you like to see do a Lions game? So we talked about Tom Brenneman, and Chris Spielman was his color. And guys, you know how much I love Chris Spielman, but volume wasn't up, but I've been told you guys were not happy with it.
Brenneman sucks.
Brenneman's the worst. I don't even care. Like, Brenneman was so bad today that I didn't even care that Chris Spielman was out growling or whatever he was doing today. He was actually kind of subdued, but probably because the Lions are a bad team.
I did see they showing some highlights from Spielman's glory days as a Detroit Lion and a Buffalo Bill.
They did, because he's congrats to him too. I mean, Hall of Fame nominee.
He played football. Hey, what do you want?
But here's the thing. I just got done with a rant on time management, and Tom Brenneman actually suggested that the Lions defense calls a timeout to stop the clock with 7 minutes remaining in the game. What?
Yep.
Maybe, not
maybe
good.
Time management is not as easy as I make it out to be. Jesus Christ.
Probably not. Megan Nisbet. Oh, wait, we should probably actually answer the part of John's question that's important. So guys from other sports. I was mentioning this to my friend. It's been a long time since I've heard Gary Thorne calling some other than Orioles games.
Oh, man. Gary Thorne used to be so good on Hockey Night.
Yeah. He has the famous call, Steve Yzerman.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's got the Darren McCarty call, too.
Mm-hmm. We didn't even talk. We completely forgot last PODcast to talk about Steve Yzerman retiring in Tampa and totally coming back to Detroit to not take that Red Wings job.
You ready for this? Hold on. This is me right now. Ready? September 16th. We're recording at 11:08.
Book it.
Steve Yzerman will be the Detroit Red Wings general manager next season.
I am pretty sure at this point when they said that Steve Yzerman wanted to come home, probably meant it literally. And that makes me sad because I'm one of those people who care very little about hockey, but I want to get excited about the Detroit Red Wings once again.
Telling you right now, book it. This is Holland's last year. He's going to retire. They want to force him out, but they're going to give him 1 year. He's going to retire. He's going to pass it on to Yzerman. Yzerman's going to have tons of cap room. It's going to be great.
Wonderful. All right. Any answer from you, Jeremy?
What was the question?
It doesn't matter.
Dude, that's my gimmick.
I like it. Megan Nisbet asking us, with Halloween coming up, is it? It's 16th of September. don't want to think about Halloween. All right. With Halloween coming up, what is everyone's favorite horror movie? Now, I don't have a favorite horror movie, but I did see The Predator the other night.
Was that any good or what?
It's a very dumb movie. And I mean that in probably the nicest, most positive way I can think about it. But it's also insanely, insanely stupid.
Okay.
You should see it. Just expect to lose brain cells, I guess. It was great. Like Keegan-Michael Keegan-Michael Kay looked great. Was great. Everyone was very funny in the movie. It has every 80s action movie trope you could ask for, right down to the multi-ethnic crew all willingly sacrificing themselves for the glory of the white boy hero to save his family and shit. But just every time it tried to expand upon the lore of the Predator universe, which, no matter what the nerds say, is not that deep. Like, I'm sorry, the Dark Horse comics are something different. But like they tried to like tie in global warming and somehow made that into a reference to Twinkies as well. As I said, the parts where they tried to expand upon the movie and the lore and this idea of the greater universe of the Predators universe, and especially how they tried to set up for the sequel, it's all very, very stupid, which I think is fairly fitting, but it's also insanely stupid. And you should see it. But it's also incredibly, really, god-awfully stupid.
Chris, do you have a favorite horror film?
I don't. I don't watch too much horror. I'm trying to think. I mean, Apocalypse Now doesn't really count as horror. What's your favorite horror while I'm thinking about this? I mean, I've got to go with Alien.
Jeremy, do you have an answer?
Monday Night Football, last week. I don't watch horror movies either, sorry. That's my literal answer.
It's Alien for me. I thought about it. It's Alien.
Yeah, I mean, Alien's a really good answer. I don't watch a ton of horror films. If I had to pick one, it would probably be Batman and Robin.
Jesus. That was the other thing, too. Like, every trailer leading up to The Predator was for like every awful, like they're making another Halloween and there's now a movie called Hellfest. Like all these horror movies just look awful, man.
Hey, Ryan, horror doesn't stand for horrible, just so you know.
If I really wanted to be weird Twitter, I should have said Phantasma or something, but no.
I thought it was an abbreviation. I messed up.
Well, I'm looking through questions. We have some pretty, okay, Joe Moore here. This might be a question to go out on. Do we trade Tate for a pick or two to get something before we don't pay him in the offseason?
Kyle Yost would like to trade Golden Tate.
Hold on. I'm actually going to entertain this, because if the Lions are 0-7 or 0-6 and the trade deadline is there, go ahead and trade Tate. I'm absolutely for turning into a baseball franchise and selling.
Whoa, hold on. Like, so am I. Like, completely, though. Like, you're trading Tate and you're trading Ansa.
Yeah,
no, but like, how much are you going
to... Over Quinn, too, honestly, because I don't think any of those three guys are going to be back anyways.
No, for those guys, I don't care what it is. You're just going to get picks back anyways.
Get something. Just don't have an Ebron situation where you just cut the guy without getting anything.
Right.
Yeah, no, I mean, that won't happen, but I mean...
The only difference is, with Ansa, you might get a conditional pick, same with Tate.
Yeah, you're giving them out as rentals. Like, but I think more teams should try to make swings at rentals.
That's the one reason why they don't, is because you can get conditional pick. You can get compensational picks if you hold on to them throughout the whole year. So, I mean, if you can't get more than, I would say, a third round pick for Golden Tate, then you don't trade him. Because you could get, I mean, we saw what wide receivers got paid this offseason. Golden Tate could get really, really paid, and that means the Lions get a compensatory pick.
And everybody in Lions fandom just groaned, because Bob Quinn's draft classes have been fantastic over the past three seasons.
Just the best.
Thank you for listening to the Pride Detroit PODcast. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Our main theme was produced by Ryan Shepherd. You can find him on Twitter and on SoundCloud at I am Brian Shepherd, IamBrianSheppard. Thanks a lot to him. Check out his stuff. He's been great. He gave us Victory Monday, so go check him out. That's I am Brian Shepherd. And thank you for everyone who keeps listening and makes us one of the greatest Lions podcasts possible. Y'all are awesome. See you star side.
Till the tears run down from my eyes, Lord, somebody, ooh, somebody, can anybody find me somebody to love?
Alexa, play hits from Queen.
Okay.
Somebody to love. Somebody.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get tens of millions of songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.